Katie Marin has been the chair of the board for Friends of the Highline Elevated Walkway in New York's Upper West End, and she's written about city parks and city squares in her books. She's tapped into her penchant for celebrating public spaces, squares, plazas, and parks to make her own garden into something more than just a pastime. She moved out of New York City, bought a home, country home in Connecticut, with plenty of room for a garden, and spent 2 years making it a place where she could be truly rooted on her own land. Katie details her journey and what the earth outside her own back door could teach her in her book, Becoming a Gardener, What Reading and Digging Taught Me About Living. Katie joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us all about it. Welcome back, Katie.
Thank you, Rick. It's a great pleasure to be back. I have very fond memories of the last time.
One of my great joys is getting to talk to people like you who really appreciate a dimension of life that I have yet to really throw myself into. And gardening is one of those. And I don't often start off reading a quote that kicks off somebody else's book, but I love this quote from 2,000 years ago by Cicero. And he wrote, "If you have a garden and a library, you have everything you need." There's a lot of wisdom in that, isn't there?
I think there's a huge amount of wisdom. And when I first heard that quote about 10 years ago, I really wondered what it meant. I've pondered it ever since. And while I'm still not sure exactly what it means, I think it definitely emphasizes the elemental importance of gardens in our lives. And it certainly was one of the couple of inspirations for doing this book.
And the inspiration for your book also was this deep-seated need that apparently you had when you decided to move out of New York City to Connecticut with more than, it seems like more than a goal, it was a need. You wanted to get rooted, I mean literally rooted, by planting your own roots and getting close to the garden. Can you tell us, just to set up our interview, tell us about this journey?
Yes, about 5 years ago now, our family discovered this house in Connecticut in the beautiful countryside. It was true countryside. We live in New York. That is still our base. But this house was meant for all of us and then future generations of our family. It was built for a family before us who had lived there about 40 years and a lovely family who sold it to us. And we definitely did, as most homeowners, new homeowners do, we made it ours. It felt like ours. It looked like ours to other people. But somehow for me, I felt like I was living in their house. Mm-hmm. And that was a rather off-putting feeling. In fact, I tried to figure out what I could do. One thing I did was to get sage, which I'd never had before. And I weaved it around the doors and the windows, hoping that would make a difference. But somehow I still felt like I wasn't in my own home. One day on a walk with the dog, I thought, well, maybe if I root myself to the land, that will root me to the house. And that's what prompted me to make a garden.
Now, tranquil and calming, that's the feeling I had just paging through your gorgeous book, the way the art fits the topics and the paintings that you include and your dreams about how connecting with nature, with dirt, can really enrich your life. Now, the way I understand it, this was a family dream. You and your husband were going to make this the next stage of your life. And then sadly, your husband passed away. And then we have the pandemic. And you had a lot to cope with personally. And it was kind of, it gave you a more of an impetus to really get the most from a wellness point of view out of your garden. Tell us about that.
Yes, it was definitely my husband's and my dream to have this house for us and our children, and then when they have children. And the house is big, so it could include everyone, I would think, naturally. Who knows what life would be like over time, but that was our goal. And he did die very suddenly, totally out of the blue, in December of 2019. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the pandemic hit in 2020. By that point, I'd say we'd spent 10 or 12 nights in the house. So we immediately bolted to the countryside, as a lot of people in New York did who had places they could go. I felt very lucky that we did have a place we could go. So we could walk outside and feel free and feel safe. Mm-hmm. It was a lot to contend with. And I think being there was as we just said, calming for me and calming for my children as well. Those of us who live in New York remember that time as being very gray and very cold. It was a particularly unappealing spring.
Mm-hmm.
And what I had first done earlier in the fall of 2019, before any of this had happened, was to plant masses of tulips. And when they came out in March and April, the joy they gave us at a time when everything was still brown, there were no leaves out on trees, it was stark, was vast. And I think right there, I appreciated all the more the value of a garden.
Well, this was in the darkest times of COVID, wasn't it? This was in 2020.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've got so many friends in Europe who are just so enthusiastically city dwellers. They just have an apartment in Paris or in Rome and they love it. And then suddenly you're in a pandemic and your apartment, which was a springboard into a celebration of a life in all of its diversity and vitality, it becomes more of a prison and they can't get out. And fortunately, you just 2 months, 3 months before this happened to our whole world, you suddenly moved into what is the perfect place to get through a pandemic.
We did. We absolutely did. And it also gave me a chance to be there with the house, get to know the house better, make it feel more like I live there, and at the same time, be much closer to nature. One garden writer wrote about how she really could tell the day of the month by what was happening in her garden. And I thought that was so astute in observation. And I certainly wasn't anywhere close to that. But I did have a sense more of seasons and the change of time and the warming of the year by being there day to day rather than being there just on weekends.
Yes. Katie, you wrote, a garden like life can never be pinned down. It's in a perpetual state of change. You had a concerted effort to feel rooted, and you realized the best way to feel rooted is to put down roots, literally, to plant things and make roots happen. Was there something to that? Did you find that sort of rootedness in the dirt?
I did. And in fact, one writer talks about the healing power of digging. And she talks, in this case, she didn't have the kind of sudden upheaval that I obviously had, but there's something, again, very elemental, I think, about just putting your hands in that dirt, and it takes you away from everything else. I think that's one reason people love gardening so much.
Mm-hmm.
It puts them in their own world and sort of lets the cares of the world disappear for a while, and I think that certainly was satisfying to me, and it's how basic is it? It's, when you think about it, it's so very healing.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're talking with Katie Marin. Katie has been a fixture with the arts and cultural organizations in New York City for years. She wrote for Vogue. She's been on the board of city giants like the Met, the New York Public Library, the Friends of the High Line, and the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation. But moving to a country house in nearby Connecticut presented Katie with a new opportunity to develop her skills at feeling rooted at home. Katie's book is called Becoming a Gardener, What Reading and Digging Taught Me About Living. And you're not the first person, Katie, to be philosophical about this. The French philosopher Rousseau, as you explain in your book, wrote, "Tell me about the garden you're dreaming of, and I will tell you who you are." Does that resonate with you?
It did, and I've thought about what would I be and what am I, and for me, first of all, what I would like to be is a dirt gardener, which is that person that really sits on the ground and digs in the dirt. But when I dream of a garden, I dream about two different things. One, very wild and romantic and full of all sorts of toppling down vines and flowers. And the other part is a very structured vegetable garden, something very productive and purposeful. And really, that's what I've tried to do in this first garden, is to make it what often people call a kitchen garden, which has flowers in it, but it's largely vegetables. And there has been something particularly satisfying about pulling vegetables out of the ground and then enjoying them that evening.
There is something. I mean, if people haven't done that, they really have missed an important part of life, is just pulling something out of the ground and then eating it almost immediately. It's mainlining all the beauty and the fertility of the earth. There's something about it. And it comes across in your book. Your photos are just gorgeous. I noticed what it was about your photos. A big dimension of it was the light. Did you ever think about that, how important light is for a garden?
Definitely. Two thoughts on that. One is the photographer, Bill Abranowitz, I agree, made the most beautiful photographs. And so much of them is about the light. It's a sort of the broad brush of light in late afternoon across the entire garden. And it's light on dew in a plant so close up, or the light coming through, streaming through a tree. Mm. I think he was amazing in catching light. Mm. Also, one writer, Beverly Nichols, talked about the four L's of gardening. And they are in this order of importance in his mind: loam, light, love, and luck. And obviously, one needs sunlight in order for a plant to grow.
What was the first one? What was the first L?
Loam, meaning soil.
Soil,
loam.
Light.
And I think that soil, that's another thing I've learned a lot about. And I never thought I would be interested in the technicalities of soil or what goes into making good soil. And I've actually become fascinated by it, which I guess tells me that maybe I have, in fact, become a gardener.
Well, yeah, because you wrote so vividly about chocolate earth. Yeah, I love this line: if soil is chocolate earth, compost is black gold, and manure is the glue that holds it all together.
I think you'd appreciate that one writer calls beautiful, healthy soil devil's food cake.
Yes, devil's food cake.
It really does look like it.
Yes. And then in your book is like traveling. I mean, you know, this is a travel show. And with the help of your book, you actually travel through the garden and the different dimensions of it. And it's like finding a different community. You talk about plants and trees of note: pumpkin, kale, rhubarb, roses. Tell us a little bit about your thinking about why one plant or tree would be of note.
Of note, I think, is just of importance to me. For instance, you mentioned kale, and kale is of no importance to me. I don't like kale, but my daughter loves kale. And kale is also easy to grow. And particularly for a young, brand new gardener, it's valuable to have something easy to grow. Mm-hmm. That's satisfying. So in that sense, kale was important. Pumpkins are something I tried to grow when our children were small. And every year I'd get the timing so off, no matter what it said on the seed packet, that I basically finally gave up. And I started to do that again. Trees are an entirely different matter. And one thing we did that seems to have moved several friends is that, and I was copying people. I read about a boy and his bar mitzvah. I read about a couple and their wedding, a woman in England who, for her birthday, would always ask for a tree instead of a present. And so I thought, to mark the fact that we're now in this house, which we plan to have for a long time to come, we would all choose our own tree and plant a small tree, and then over time, watch it grow. One writer talked about when you plant a tree, you change the landscape, and it will never look the same way again.
I thought that
was very moving, and it was moving, certainly for me, to have these trees be planted for all of us. And when I watch them grow, it gives me satisfaction.
Katie Marin is our guest on Travel with Rick Steves. She outlines the life lessons that digging in your own dirt can provide in her lovely book called Becoming a Gardener: What Reading and Digging Taught Me About Living. Katie's also written about the value of public spaces in her earlier books, City Squares and City Parks. We have a link to her work and her earlier interviews with us at ricksteves.com/radio. Katie, there's so many dimensions to appreciating a garden that you just reveal and shine a light on. One of them is the beauty of scent and how scent prompts memories and it announces new arrivals. A flower's scent really is worth studying and appreciating to fully appreciate the garden.
It is. And writers have talked about how it's an aspect characteristic of flowers that people don't often think about, but it can be the most meaningful of all. And we think about scents, they are always very fleeting. They come and they go. Even a woman walks by with a beautiful perfume. You smell the lily of the valley and then you move on to the rest of the room, whatever it might be. It comes and it goes, but somehow that memory of the scent stays with you. So in that sense, I've learned much more about the power of scent.
Yeah, there's so many things to appreciate that without being purposeful, we don't appreciate. You know, I do not have a green thumb, and it's kind of a danger of using that as an excuse not to appreciate what you appreciate so vividly. I'm inspired by your book, but I wouldn't know where to start. For somebody who really has never gotten into gardening, what are a couple of do-it-yourself tips? Where do you begin? How can you not be sort of intimidated by the whole process?
Well, first of all, you should not worry about whether or not you have a green thumb, because that stopped me from trying to garden for years. And I have always thought, like you do, that I have no green thumb. I really have a negative green thumb. Hmm. But there are writers, and I quote them in the book, who will say that green thumbs mean nothing. That's all wrong. There's no such thing as a green thumb. There are gardeners and non-gardeners, and the gardeners are the people who put in the work. And yeah. I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think one thing that's wonderful about a garden is it's never perfect. It can't be perfect. It's mm-hmm. dealing with nature all the time and different weather. And any gardener at whatever level they are is always dealing with trial and error. So in that sense, there should be some sort of relief that whatever you do, it really doesn't matter. It hit me early on in this project that, in fact, my quest was to become a gardener, but that I never had to take a test to prove it.
No. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it was really just for myself.
Yes.
As far as where to start, I think you just start. You start with good soil, and that you can figure out in a variety of ways.
Yeah.
And then you figure out something you might want to see or look at and go ahead and plant it.
Katie Marin, thanks for writing Becoming a Gardener, What Reading and Digging Taught Me About Living. And if we could just wrap up our conversation with how your garden has been a newfound, sort of a newfound way of being, of creating a newfound friendship with the natural world.
That's so true. It's added a huge dimension to my life. I had hoped it would. I didn't know whether it would. As I continued along on the project, I wasn't sure it was. But then in the end, I realized it has. And as I now look back, having done it and continuing to garden, I realize all the more how incredibly valuable it's been to me.
Katie Marin, thanks so much. And thanks for inspiring gardeners and non-gardeners alike with your book, Becoming a Gardener.
Thank you very much.
Whether or not you have a favorite garden to escape to, our next guest suggests we'll all be better off if we allow ourselves a little downtime every day, just to let our minds wander. Alan Lightman sings the praises of wasting time in just a minute on Travel with Rick Steves.